this is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop. Right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hey, good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl. How about yourself?
All right, man. It was good seeing you yesterday, if only for a moment.
Yeah, for like 2 seconds. I would have came early, but we didn't really have a lot of people come through after, so.
Yeah,
it was nice.
Well,
it was nice meeting some people down here.
They came to see you earlier before you were there.
Yeah.
Sorry. So who's coming to see Connor?
Well, I.
Why?
That's an inside joke.
Why? But I feel very delighted, Sandy's family.
Yeah.
Thank you.
big fans from around the country.
Yeah, you know. Oh, that's, man, you don't give me a chance to introduce you. It's the one and only Sandy Williams, and it's, you know, it's Monday or Friday when Sandy is here, and Blue Monday.
Wow, there's no joy in Cheeseville. That's what you were referring to, right?
The
blueness that came from London.
Well, you know, man.
That's when you play football in Greenwich time.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's a tougher game, apparently.
Well, it was the first game, they said, with teams with winning records out of all of
in London. You mean?
Yeah, out of all of those games, this was the first one where they're both teams with winning records. So I guess it as if it mattered. But anyway, I got a lot to talk about this morning, man.
Is there something else other to talk about? You know, all my life, my Mondays have been almost, the mood of my Mondays have been regulated by whether the Packers won or lost. Now, I have to say, the wisdom of my later years has weaned me from letting my emotions and my self-image ride with the Packers, you know? It's like when they used to lose, I used to feel like a lesser person.
Well, you know what?
Now I've got other reasons to feel
last decade or so, the Packer games, although I'm always there, I don't miss them.
Yeah.
They just don't have the meaning as much as they did when Bart Starr and Fuzzy Thurston and Bob Skowronski and Ray Ninsky and Willie Wood and Herb Adderley and Forrest Gregg and Jim Ringo and Paul Hornung and Max McGee and Boyd Dowler.
Yeah.
You know, when you remember those names.
Because what you just listed there is kind of an interesting thing because it shows some of the change in the NFL. That was a remarkably white group of men that you listed.
Yeah,
names
but
of.
The league
has morphed from what it was, which was probably lesser athletes coming from a smaller pool of participants in football, lower paid people. It was a much different thing. Lombardi was probably the bridge from old-time professional football wearing leather helmets and being scrappy guys who drank during the week to train into modern-day
NFL.
You
know, you could say that also about the basketball era. And, when Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain and Oscar Robinson and only a handful of guys. But those days, when the Packers, it just meant more to me. And I don't know why. Maybe it has something to do with Ray Scott.
Yes. The announcer, he was fantastic.
Nobody has come close to Ray Scott, who was the announcer for the Packers.
I think the
in
other
those
thing,
good old days.
The Packers were a little less, you know, in those days we had to listen on the radio.
Yes.
To home games because they were blacked out.
Right.
And TV games were fewer and far between, and there weren't as many games. They played maybe 10 or 11 games a season, not 17.
But I always, the ones that I cared the most about was when they would play the Detroit Lions and Alex Carricks.
No.
And that rivalry where the guy would stump you.
See, I remember the Rams and Deacon Jones.
Oh, that's fearsome foursome. Yeah, Lamar Lundy.
Yeah, the Rams games.
Rosie Greer.
I can remember where I was driving, listening to the Rams games.
The fearsome foursome.
Yeah.
You know, let's see. Roman Gabriel was a quarterback.
Yep.
And but I just, like I said, I remember Alex Carricks and stumping on the guys when they were down. All that stuff. It was brutal.
Well, and he used to talk about how when there was a pile, it was like a fumbled ball, they'd be biting each other. And it's like Jim Taylor would talk about biting someone's finger off.
Yeah, Jim Taylor was the running back who would kick guys when he went down. I mean, it was a different time. And I would always
Night Train Lane with
Dick Night Train Lane
with the neck, you know, yeah.
But I would always long for the Thanksgiving games with the Detroit Lions and the Green Bay Packers. No game better than those games. You sit around Thanksgiving, family together, and everybody's waiting for the Packers and the Lions.
Ray, actually, it was a national game. That was the only football game on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Ray Scott, man. So you know, I got to remember a little something to dig up Ray Scott.
Yeah,
I think one of the greatest announcers. I don't know if he's even in the Hall of Fame, but if he's not, he should have been. Everybody else followed him because that's how great he was. But anyway, I digress. Couple of old guys. you know, talking about what maybe only a handful of people in the audience remember. But I do want to say this. Where is it at? Sandy, I thought golf was a warm weather game.
Golf?
Yeah.
It all depends on whether you're playing in Scotland or not. I mean, if people who go to Scotland or Ireland play golf, play in terrible, windy, rainy, cold weather, and that's...
Do you?
I have done that, but only one. I went to Ireland once and played a couple of days in driving rain. I played out in Oregon, and there's a kind of a famous golf course.
Do you do it here in the state when it's cold and wet and rainy?
No, I don't play in wet.
Okay, so let me ask you something. The WIAA Girls Golf Tournament is this week.
Yeah.
Why do they wait so long? Why do they wait until it's cold like this?
Well, this isn't so bad.
For golf?
Well, it's a little bit like hitting a rock. When the golf ball gets cold, it feels like a rock when you hit it, but you can wear a stocking cap. And
yeah, but it changes the game, right? The ground is frozen.
Those Scotsmen were hardy sorts, you know.
The ones who created it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I think golf at its beginning was played in any kind of weather where there was still grass on the ground. And
I get that, but high school girls, you would think that the best time to do the tournament is while it's still warm outside, right?
Well, the girls' season is in the fall, so you can play the state tournament at the beginning of the season, but that would not make a lot of sense.
Oh, that's why it's in their season is in the the fall because.
Yeah.
Everything else is going on, and they come up on the short end of things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, except for the young lady who played quarterback this past week. What's the name of her high school?
Here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, man, she made it national TV, man. They even talked about her on national news, nightly news, on yesterday. Young lady who, what school does she play for? What high school does she play for? Maybe somebody listening.
Pewaukee.
Is that what you saw it?
Yeah, girl quarterback starts Pewaukee High School's homecoming game.
Wow.
And they scored, what was it, 66 to?
Senior Ava Mads. I'm trying to think.
I'll be darned. Well, you know.
66-6. They played the pious ninth popes?
Well, you know, I can remember in high school, normally a high school sets up a patsy team for homecoming.
Right.
And apparently
that still goes on.
Did a real good job of that, huh?
You know, what's your take on girls playing tackle football?
That's all right. I think all of the talk about women being more fragile than men in terms of I don't know what their physical structure and their ability to absorb. You know, I think the hormonal structure of a woman doesn't support as much musculature. So, but you know,
hey Sandy,
whatever.
On a high school level, I got a story to tell you about. I keep telling people, I ran a youth football program, and I know when I first took it over, there was a mother who was raising Sam with me because when we were playing flag football, her daughters were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I turned the game from flag into tackle. I was the guy who changed it to tackle, and she wanted her daughters. They're pretty decent players in middle school, right? But after we went to tackle, there were some nefarious coaches who would send the guys out to get them. They were playing defensive backs, right?
Oh, my.
And I was telling the mom, hey, I can't protect your daughters. They have on a football helmet and shoulder pads. Well, she kept telling me, well, yeah, they're going to play. You're not going to discriminate against my daughters. I said, ma'am, they have on a helmet and shoulder pads. I can't protect them when they have that on or they're on the football field. And sure enough, you know, one of the coaches would send, they're playing a defensive back, would send his offensive pulling guys.
Mm.
You know, and
supposedly bully them.
Yeah, huh? And when they would get treated like Raggedy Ann dolls, the mom came back at me.
You know, I don't think this is a good line of discussion, actually.
Oh.
And as you know, I grew up in a family with three sisters, so my sense is that
we better change
the subject.
Women
should have lots of equality, and anyway, it's not a good idea to, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Got to go to. Sorry. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Falling like dominoes. They don't know about it, man.
Music from back when.
Yeah, man. I don't know how he could even know what that is, but anyway.
You know, one thing I was going to mention as I was driving out here. My twin sister sent me a photo of the moon last night. Did you see the moon last night?
Yeah, and I saw the moon this morning.
This morning.
It's still there.
That's what I was going to say. I was driving out west, and on the horizon, big moon. You know, it's down close to the horizon.
What is it called?
A harvest moon,
right.
Yeah, and so I was thinking, you know, everyone in the world sees the same moon. You know, when we have a full moon here, they have a full moon in Ukraine or whatever. You know, it's that low. Well, it revolves around the
Earth is.
Yeah, so they don't see it at the same time we do in the same place, but they see the same moon. And everyone in Milwaukee looks up and sees the same moon. And so maybe we all ought to talk about the moon. That's something where we can reach agreement. I bet CJ could call and we could talk about how spectacular the moon was last night and this morning.
Let me write that down.
I think if we spend more than two shows talking about the moon, I don't think people will tune in anymore.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And I noticed that this morning, and I'm like, hey, the moon is still there, and it's a lot bigger than it normally is.
When it's down close to the horizon,
right.
It looks much like the sun, too, when it's setting. But, you know, it did make me think metaphorically that That's a fact that people can look at, and it's consistent. People don't argue much about the moon, and it's, I think it's because it's something they're looking at. It's tangible. They all look at it from more or less the same wondrous perspective. And so there's an easy-to-reach agreement about such things, and it's kind of a bridge for people who otherwise disagree to see something like that. And I think it has to do with nature and the overwhelming aspect of nature and its capacity to make us all feel like we're one. You know, we're all dealing with the same problem. We all, when the flood comes and we're all standing there watching our homes get flooded, I think we lose our political differences and we start getting unified. So I guess my point is that it's a demonstration of the extent to which a different view on facts, an inability to view facts similarly, is what drives us apart.
Hey, Sandy, That's deep. Monday morning, that's really deep,
Sandy. That's too big. That's too big a thought.
But I'll tell you, pretty soon we're going to be there. We're going to be inhabiting the moon. And pretty soon, nukes will be on the moon.
But we
the question is, whose nukes are we going to put on the moon?
Well, we do have a problem even with facts, nature facts being the same. For instance, global climate change.
Right.
We haven't yet been able to view that as the flood that unifies us, you know, because it's sweeping up around our feet. You know, and here we are all experiencing this weather change thing, but we aren't yet ready to view it from the same angle.
Well, you know, the insanity in that is none of us are going to escape what happens with climate change. This is where we live.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't care where you go, how high a peak you want to get on, it's going to impact and affect you. And yet we still have people arguing, you know, about all of this. And to me, I don't know if it's out of ignorance, Sandy, or if it's just that you just don't want to see things change.
I think it's vantage point. I think people who view something from a particular vantage point that includes their own status quo and their own view of what makes them feel secure and safe, biases how they view things that are subject to being looked at with judgment. So that, for instance, poverty in the cities, it's a fact.
Right.
How those people live in the cities is a fact. But we can't look at it with a unified eyes because people look at it from their own vantage point, both in terms of whether it exists, the extent to which it exists, as well as why it exists. And I suppose the why is always a question. You know, why do we have a moon? Why does it look like that? Why is it imponderable? But why is where we really get separated when we look at something like poverty in the cities? But we also have trouble even evaluating how it exists. Some people view it as spilling out and endangering everyone who comes within any kind of range of metropolitan Milwaukee. They're in danger because of this of the situation in the city. Other people who live close to the situation understand it to be much more benign than that and understand much more about it.
So all of those things from your perspective and where you live, your age. I mean, for instance, you're in my generation. We know that there's some climate change. We've lived long enough to witness these changes. There are younger people who know there's climate change because they've read enough to know. They haven't, you know, that some things are changing in the projections of what's going to happen in their lives. So they're concerned and they're pushing back because, you know, they want to be able to live unencumbered by the fears of what's coming from climate. But you and I and our generation, we saw the manifestation of climate change.
Although, interestingly, it's probably our generation is more into climate denial than the young people.
Yeah, it's
young people are going to bear the brunt of the problems associated with it and the expense of trying to avoid it. But I think we have a much more head-in-the-sand approach, our generation does, to most everything.
Yeah.
Probably because most everything that threatens our status quo. We've had a great status quo. Our generation can hold its head up to say that every year of our lives has involved a status quo that's been pretty good.
All right, it's falling like dominoes. 844-967-2789. But you can text us at the same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You know, man, I enjoy talking to Sandy so much, even off the air. Just little things, right? You know, talking about the paper routes and, and the first cell phone. I mean, the first transistor radio, AM, was all that it was.
Well, AM was about all we had.
Yeah. There wasn't any FM.
No, there wasn't FM. And we used to have that UHF thing on the top of the UHF, TV set.
Yes.
So you could get more than three radios. TV stations. We had, Channel 6, Channel 12, Channel 4.
And
then we had the UHS thing.
Yeah.
UHF, the signal was really,
hazy.
Use a French term, crappy.
Yep, it was hazy.
You'd have to tune it in to get Channel 27.
Yeah. Well, so, and the other part of it was, Channel 10 came in there. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, it was a breakthrough, but that was part of the regular, long run, whatever they called the numbers, the numbers below 12.
So just to give you a little snippet of how strange and weird I was.
We all know her.
I remember
this doesn't require a lot of.
I remember in middle school. Watching Firing Line with Bill Buckley.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the other guy's name?
Yeah, the liberal guy.
Yeah, he hung around a long time.
He was from New Orleans.
Maybe 10 years ago or something, but he's stayed around a long time. But imagine a kid in middle school watching that. So, always was fascinated with that. But anyway, let's talk about Democrats need new blood. I would agree with the thought that Democrats need new blood.
I mean, you're like me, a little bit tired of hearing about Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden as being the leaders of the party.
You know, Sandy, those of us who've been around a little while and politically been engaged, and I remember, Nancy Pelosi, come on, still around.
Yeah.
Still at it.
Senator Boxer?
Yeah, Barbara. What is the... The oldest one, she's still around.
Feinstein.
Dianne Feinstein. Got to be over 90.
Yeah, it was interesting. Back in the 70s, there were young people bursting on the scene. I remember when John Lindsay was was kind of burst on the scene as a new Democrat. We had Birch Bayh and all these guys who were running for president in the 70s who were, in their 50s, and that was considered mature now.
But I guess people can push back and say, hey, Earl, there are young Democrats. They're progressives. They're part of the Progressive Party. Are you not aware of the group of young Democrats that are there? But I guess what I should temper what I'm saying with, I shouldn't use the term mainstream, dare I?
No, but I think even with those, I mean, they get AOC and they've got the king, right? But those people are in their 20s, high early 30s. I mean, they're like super young.
Yeah, there's got to be some 50-year-olds.
And the people with street cred, you know, like Pete Buttigieg is beginning, you know, begins to be the kind of age and prominence,
right.
And get the kind of credentials that carry someone into the national stage. But we don't. Democrats are short on those people.
So the question becomes: Republicans, you can see they've got them all.
Well, they've got a bunch of very likable guys. They've got Ted Cruz. They've got Marco Rubio.
Yeah, but they're in that generation.
Yeah, but they are all in that generation of middle age, early middle age kind of.
Yeah, and so where did the Democrats miss out on that? Or they did have some who either lost.
Well, they
re-election, or they
we had them and they hung around too long. You know, well, we had one that got elected president, right? Barack Obama.
Well, but he
and Hillary Clinton in 2005 was one of them, right? And you know, problem is she's still there. And Joe Biden, and one of the times he ran for president, you know, he started out he was 29 when he first got elected to the Senate, so he's been around a long time, and he went through that period. I just think. Our generation, to the extent that we've gained power, we've had a lot of trouble relinquishing it, and that's been particularly true in the world of politics. I mean, the Republicans aren't exactly short in the tooth when it comes to congressional leadership. Mitch McConnell's not a spring chicken.
Right.
Like, yeah. It looks more like a snapping turtle.
Yeah. Yeah, but the difference, though, Sandy, again, is... You know, those Rubio and Cruz, whether you like them or not, they've been there a while, you know, and whether you like their politics or not, they can ascend because they have that. They've been around.
Right.
They've gone through the rigors of it. I was trying to think the other day of who would be the Democrats in the Congress and the Senate who would fit that bill. And I got to tell you, I struggle a little bit, who have notoriety on a national scale. I struggle.
Yeah, most of the Democrats come from the state political scene. And even Pete Buttigieg, he came out of that.
Minnesota.
And Gavin Newsom, no, Pete is from Indiana.
Oh, Indiana, that's right.
But they're coming out of the state political processes. And incidentally, that is more where our presidents have come from. The Senate has not been... necessarily such a fertile ground for becoming president.
So has it been oversight from the party's perspective? Because it's missing, right? I mean, to be quite frank with you, that part of it, you can see it's missing. Nobody says that the young group has been around long enough that they can ascend. There's a pecking order, a learning curve, and all those things. So you can't say that the young progressive generation is ready. But it wasn't so much that group that should have been in the middle ascending to power now was blocked off by, again, the power of a Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer is about 10 years younger than Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, he is not like he's archaic, but he's certainly been around a long time, and he's in that power structure.
Yeah, I think the issue is when you get power in Washington, we don't have term limits,
right.
and seniority carries a lot of clout, particularly in the Senate, in terms of the assignments you get and the amount of prominence you can achieve from those assignments. Adam Schiff, there's some people coming up.
Yeah, Adam Schiff is a good guy.
In the Democratic Party. But they're in Washington rewards seniority in many ways, at least our representative government does. And then if you get power and you're in a position to hold it, then you do things to make sure you secure your power. So, I mean, I think one of the reasons someone like Hillary's been around so long is she hasn't gotten elected. You know, right. Once you get elected president, you're out.
Like Obama.
Like Obama. You're yesterday's leader, not tomorrow's.
Well, you know, Sandy, and I think therein creates the dilemma that we are in. The longer you are there, the more likely it is that democracy is not going to be practiced. I mean, that's a tough statement to make. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think the more we draw our leaders, I hate to say something like what Trump might say in his clumsy way, but I think the more we draw our leaders out of Washington, the more we draw people out of a culture that's premised in the lobbying and
right.
the people who carry sway in Washington, and the people in Washington don't even perceive the extent to which they're subject to the sway of all these interests, because it's part of the culture there. So the way we formulate our foreign policy is sort of blocked by and structured and contained and confined by these parameters of interest in Washington. And that's the way people look at policy, too. I mean, I couldn't believe they were just saying, well, if the Republicans regain power in the Senate, then it looks like they can get in the way of the negotiating of prices for prescription drugs. Now,
and as if that's something that's a positive thing.
How loony is that? Well, it's not even positive, but how loony is it that we can all publicly talk about the fact that this political process, which is open and people look at and they understand, and it's maybe a major platform of the Republican Party, is that they're against, or would be against, the continued negotiation or the opening up of negotiation on prescription drugs, when that's like the operation of the marketplace. So the reason we can't do it is because K Street has figured out ways to persuade Congress that the government shouldn't be able to negotiate prices for drugs.
You know, Sandy, that's certainly a big part of it, with the drug negotiation part of it. But
I think it's a symptom. It's a glaring symptom of how much Washington is under the thumb of special interests. That somehow we could all talk about that, like, well, yeah, you know, this party gets in power, we won't negotiate the price of prescription drugs.
And that's what, you know, Tom from L.A. and why he's so right about all of that. But it's not just the prescription prices. It's everything.
Everything, yes.
And so it's the reason why, even through the election process, and people get all excited about the election process, you know, once it's done, then things don't change. I don't care if it's the Democrat or the Republican, for the most part, even though this time Joe Biden must be commended for trying to change it, at least, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, well,
he's at least addressing what should have been addressed decades ago, and trying to bring it back, I guess, Sandy, into a situation where people in this country can feel like, hey, I'm a part of it.
Although, to be honest with you, my experience even long ago in politics was that the
same thing.
The interests that have a big financial interest in government play both sides of the aisle, and if they're dealing with the conservative side of the aisle, they might try to get the conservative side to tamp down regulation to the maximum extent they might
right.
move. But on the liberal side, they'll say, okay, we know you've got to do something in this regard. Here's a bill that we can swallow.
Yeah.
Here's something that we'll
sanitize.
Here's
it
a way
bit.
To throw a bone to your audience.
Yeah.
And still protect our interest. Those are the things that get passed. And so, in the name of liberalism, frequently is a bill that's passed that was probably drafted by the very industry that's impacted by it, because it's been structured in a way that they find entirely acceptable.
You know what's amazing to me, Sandy? It's amazing to me that we can have this open conversation, because all of the things you're talking about, they're not hidden. They do this stuff in broad daylight.
Right.
And they do all of this, and the American people either were too busy or were not aware of actually what's taking place. So we're being fed, make sure you get out and vote.
Well,
and vote.
I think what's happening, it used to be done secretly. 30 years ago, we wouldn't be talking like this, because it was all done with Sub Rosa, and the politicians weren't confessing that they were all impacted by this. But somehow in the last 10 years, this sausage making that is the process of government, you know, it's terrible to watch your sausage get made.
Right.
Well, I guess what Trump and all this sort of cynical approach to government is that, hey, we'll let them watch. Doesn't matter. They don't care.
Yeah.
We could tell them that we're gerrymandering. It's okay. It's a strategy. And they understand that we're doing it for the very purpose that they will find just fine, because the reason we're gerrymandering is to keep us and them, the people who are our supporters, in power.
Listen, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Tell them I see you. We'll be right back.
That was a lot.
Put your money where your mouth is. Be about that action.
What you say?
It's all I'm living for.
Kind of music we need on a Monday morning.
Let me take you high.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. Smooth listening music. You remember, was it Dave Kuznir?
Oh, I do remember, yes. At night, he and he, yeah.
This is Dave Kuznir. And how are you doing? Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams.
This is good.
Anyway.
You know, the only thing is, if you keep doing that, you're going to have to wake me up. Sandy, wake up.
Let's go. Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. It's too bad that our politicians spend 80% of their day having to dial for dollars and get campaign contributions just to be in the game. But that's the system that we have because of Citizens United. But what I wanted to say was that, did anybody else think that Ron Johnson looked like he was like a deer in a headlight the other night? And like he, honestly, I thought the guy has aged. Talk about older people. He has aged so much and has slowed down so much compared to, you know, I mean, I guess the going over to Russia and having all of these fake electors and all these different things must take a real toll on your on who you are, because he looked old, man.
Well, he was up against a 35-year-old guy, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, and Mandela looked fresh. Mandela answered questions directly. He didn't stammer. If you ever notice, Ron's got his little how he does things. One, if he first off attacks either the liberal press or the liberal moderators, then he goes and stammers when he gets caught in a lie. So he stammers, not stutters, stammers. Then he goes and he will bring up a source that he has no, kind of like CJ and these guys that call in, Dave and these guys that call in, that don't actually have a source for their.
Now, Tom, you call in too.
For their article. Oh, I know I do, but the thing is, I tell you right up front, I am an FDR Democrat.
Yes.
I am a person that believes in investing in our country.
So
I am not a person that believes really and truly. I think that when we do a lot of this negotiation and we do these different things with a party that is very not, I know this goes against what you're talking about, Sandy, but the thing is, when we start negotiating away things, we end up with Medicare Part D.
So, Tom,
I know you are in agreement with me, Tom. I don't understand why you have a latent need to disagree with me, because I was saying exactly the same thing. We end up we end up in our politics with these things like prescription drug limitations on negotiation. I mean, what the heck? How does that happen?
Right, but do you think that's because we as Democrats always want to get along and negotiate and all of this kind of stuff?
No, I think it's because as I was saying, my experience with lobbying is that they're pretty smart, and so if they've got power, they, and like in the Republican side, and they've got someone they know will go to the all the way to the wall with what they want, they go all the way to the wall. When they've got the Democrats, maybe, and they think they've got a there's gonna be some action taken against them, they come forward with their bill. That does something, but not very much, and it's enough for the Democrats to throw a bone, and that's the stuff that gets passed. You know, it's like the only modification.
Well, I see that as the problem. The problem is we have a great program like Social Security that FDR brought about. We have the works, you know, WPA system. We have these types of systems that were out there. And then what happens is we start negotiating with Republicans.
So, Tom,
the program gets worse, and then when it gets worse, Republicans say it doesn't work.
Let me ask you, do you think that the majority or the minority of the American people understand lobbyists? Which, and what that actually renders?
I think, in my opinion, they need to be educated about it more. They need to be educated about the fact every time they turn a commercial or a TV on, they're seeing TV commercials all over the place. And they didn't see that 20, 30 years ago, every commercial being a political commercial.
I'm not just saying during political times, but I mean the impact that lobbyists have on our lives.
100%. I mean, one of the reasons, if you guys want to know the truth, one of the reasons why Bernie Sanders was such a great candidate and is because he's from such a small state that everyone in the whole state knows exactly who Bernie Sanders is. So therefore, when they go and put a negative ad up about Bernie Sanders in Vermont, the people don't believe
because
they know Bernie.
So my point is not so much the individual as what the process of lobbying is and what it does and the impact it has on the day-to-day lives of all of us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a return on investment for those lobbyists.
I think the reason lobbyists have such sway is that legislation has become so complex. And as soon as you have a complicated bill, you've got that's food for lobbyists.
But they've made it complicated.
We also know that Alec just goes and gives a piece of legislation right off the photocopier. And that's what they put up for legislation. Legislative Exchange Council.
I'm talking though about the legislation that involves very complex matters, the Affordable Care Act. Very complex, and the more the Supreme Court requires, as they did in this most recent round of decisions. Like I said at the time, I thought the most troublesome decision was the environmental decision that came out on the same day as Doe, and the environmental decision basically said that if the legislation isn't very specific about a matter that has a substantial impact on any part of the public, then it's not going to be constitutional if the regulatory agency takes the action based on their expertise. The New Deal was premised on legislation that was quite... it set up objectives, it set up broad frameworks. I can guarantee you that the Security Exchange Act did not set out all of the standards that were going to be set up under the SEC to regulate our securities industry. And, you know, and in fact, the regulations that did get promulgated by the SEC are what has made the American financial market the profoundly most influential market in the world. And now there are people who are trying to get the SEC's regulation. Trump and others are attacking the SEC and say, we got to get rid of some of that regulation. That would be throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
We've got to go to a break.
Well, 844. Tom, we got to go to a break.
844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.